President Trump has said he believes strongly in clean water and clean air, but he's skeptical about climate change, and also that people have contributed to the problem that many other world leaders are calling a crisis.
I think it's a big scam for a lot of people to make a lot of money.
I'm Carol Holsapple. This week on the Allegheny Front, how President Trump's point of view and his administration's policies are sticking to the status quo, favoring energy that relies on carbon-producing coal. We'll talk to a law professor about how environmental policies come about in the first place.
They have to issue a proposed rule, it has to go out for public comment, and then they have to take that comment under consideration and reshape the rule and issue a final one.
And the implications of President Trump's time in office.
He's actually engaged in one of the most significant environmental rollbacks in U.S. history. I would say it's the most significant.
How the Trump administration's newest rule is an about-face on Obama-era climate initiatives. Stay with us. Before we get into our special show looking at the Trump administration's policies on coal and climate change, news about a product of coal, the coke that's baked and used to make steel. The Allegheny County Health Department and U.S. Steel have drafted an agreement to resolve multiple air pollution violations from its Clairton plant over the past 2 years. The agreement calls on the company to pay a $2.7 million fine and make pollution upgrades the company says would cost $200 million. For State Impact Pennsylvania, the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier reports.
The upgrades that U.S. Steel has agreed to include several pollution control devices. Some of the plant's coke oven batteries will get new bag houses. These are structures that can reduce the amount of particle pollution that the plant emits. Allegheny County Health Department Director Karen Hacker said the county also got U.S. Steel to improve its reporting to the county and provide better environmental training to its workers.
We might not have gotten everything we wanted, but we do believe that this settlement will result in significant improvements to air quality and the lowering of emissions.
The agreement doesn't affect a federal lawsuit the county has with the plant over pollution resulting from a December 24th fire. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
And Pennsylvania environmental regulators are moving to shut down Erie Coke, a foundry with a lengthy history of environmental violations. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick has more.
Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection Secretary Patrick McDonnell said the agency has received numerous complaints from the community over the past decade and has cited the plant in the city of Erie for numerous violations of state and federal law. DEP is denying the company's application to renew its operating permit and filing a complaint with the Erie County Court of Common Pleas seeking an injunction to shut down the facility, which employs about 125 workers. Erie Coke did not respond to requests seeking comment. Rachel Filippini, who heads the Pittsburgh-based Group Against Smog and Pollution, called the situation regrettable due to the job losses, but said the plant had exposed residents to harmful pollution for far too long. Marie Cusick, State Impact Pennsylvania.
Erie Coke appealed the filing to Pennsylvania's Environmental Hearing Board, saying the company has already rectified and resolved the regulatory violations with only minor exceptions. About 2.5 years ago, we started a podcast, Trump on Earth. We had some questions about how a newly elected President Trump would approach environmental policy.
Well, first of all, I'm not a believer in global warming. I'm not a believer in man-made global warming. It could be warming and it's going to start to cool at some point.
Would he keep campaign promises like making environmental policies more favorable to business? How could things change? To get some answers, we invited Jody Freeman to be our first guest.
Welcome, Jody.
Hi, Jody.
Great to be with you.
Freeman is a professor at Harvard Law School and founder of the school's Environmental and Energy Law Program. She also served in the Obama White House as counselor for energy and climate change. Here's a piece of her initial conversation in 2017 with the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier and me.
I feel like trying to look at this question of what what will happen next. There's been a lot of campaign promises, but it's kind of forced a lot of us to sort of look at the sort of very structure of what environmental regulations are. Maybe you could walk this through. It's a little bit, you know, civics 101, but there's sort of laws and then there are regulations, and maybe you could explain the two.
This is really the fun part of what I do. It's really weedy and nerdy, and most people think it's very boring, but it turns out to be incredibly important at the moment, because in any transition to a new president, there's always talk about what will they do to lay out their new agenda versus the prior president's agenda. And you're right, the changes take the form of either laws or rules. So the laws are something the Congress passes. When they talk about bills introduced in Congress and they get passed and they turn into legislation and the president signs that legislation, those are statutes on the books, like the Clean Air Act or the Clean Water Act. And agencies of the government, their job is to implement those statutes. So a law like the Clean Air Act basically delegates from Congress to an agency like the EPA the power to implement the Clean Air Act and make sure it works on the ground. And in the process of implementation, that's where rules come in. Agencies have to issue regulations that actually operationalize a law that often is a framework document. You know, it has some detail in it, but it doesn't prescribe all the detail to make itself implementable. And so agencies fill in the gaps, and they fill in the gaps by going through a process to issue rules. And those rules are legally binding. When EPA issues an air pollution standard that says this is how clean the air has to be, that's a binding legal requirement, and we call it a rule or a regulation. But what's really important to know is that's not legislation. That's not a statute. That's an agency product. And the agency can amend that product. It can change its mind, and it can issue a new rule. And that's what a president has control over. He has control over executive branch agencies that issue regulations, and he can have a say indirectly through his supervision of those agency heads. He can have a say in the shape of those rules as they come out of the agencies. And the last thing I'll say is when agencies issue these rules, they go through a what's called notice and comment. It's legally required. It's this elaborate process I just mentioned to you where they have to issue a proposed rule, it has to go out for public comment, and then they have to take that comment under consideration and reshape the rule and issue a final one. And after all that, that rule can be challenged in court for being illegal. So a typical legal challenge would say, hey, you issued this rule, but the law, the statute you're implementing, says you're supposed to do it another way. And so that's how a legal challenge can play out against the agency. And the very last piece to know, if this is Civics 101, is if Congress is unhappy with any of this, they can always go back and amend the law that the agency is implementing. So Congress can pass a new version of the Clean Air Act to clear up any confusion if it wants to.
You also mentioned the funding piece, that Congress has the ability to fund or basically starve agencies that it may or may not disagree with their regulations.
Yes, this is a very interesting aspect of Congress's power that many people in the public don't see a lot. It's sort of a low visibility thing, but it's very important because Congress funds all of these agencies. It appropriates money through the appropriations process. And if Congress is unhappy with some of the things agencies are doing, again, I'm sticking with our EPA example, if they don't like the fact that the EPA is regulating greenhouse gases, instead of in a highly visible way amending the Clean Air Act, which would get a lot of people's attention, instead of changing the law itself to say, hey, no more greenhouse gas regulation, that would be very hard for Congress to do. The public doesn't like it when Congress revisits these statutes. What Congress can do is basically just, as you put it, starve the agency. It can say, we are going to fund your agency, but no funds can be used for the purpose of climate change. No funds can be used for this particular purpose. And so by stipulating that, Congress can limit a program. And basically, that's a way of kind of indirectly repealing a law, because they're basically making it impossible for the agency to implement that part of it. So that's something you should be on the lookout for in the Trump administration, is to what extent does Congress defund these agencies, and to what extent does it pinpoint particular programs for defunding because Congress is particularly upset about them?
fast forward to today and the latest episode of our Trump on Earth podcast, where we ask Jody Freeman of Harvard Law School how our expectations of President Trump's environmental policies stack up to reality.
He did every single thing that we put on the worst case scenario list.
Freeman joined the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier for the 64th episode of the podcast.
He's actually engaged in one of the most significant environmental rollbacks in U.S. history. I would say it's the most significant.
Freeman says that's because of the looming danger of climate change and the pressing timeline for doing something about it. Trump says the U.S. will leave the Paris Climate Accord, and his administration has frozen fuel efficiency standards for cars and trucks and dumped the Clean Power Plan to reduce carbon emissions from the power sector for the much weaker ACE, or Affordable Clean Energy Rule. EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler recently rolled it out.
As we stand here today, the United States is the number one energy producer in the world. At the same time, we've reduced our carbon emissions and improved air quality and public health. The ACE rule will continue our nation's progress.
Instead of encouraging states to get rid of coal in favor of cleaner sources, it will mandate modest improvements in efficiency at coal-fired power plants. And we invited Jody Freeman back to Trump on Earth to talk about it. Here's Reed Frazier again.
So we should give some background to the latest release of the ACE rule, the Affordable Clean Energy Rule. It's aimed at the electric sector, the second largest source of greenhouse gases in the country. In 2015, the Obama administration unveiled a rule that would cut emissions from that sector. That was called the Clean Power Plan. What was that plan, and what is this ACE rule that's replacing it?
So to put this in perspective, we just have to remember what the Obama administration tried to do on climate policy.
And today we're here to announce America's Clean Power Plan, a plan 2 years in the making, and the single most important step America has ever taken in the fight against global climate change.
And the policy had two main pillars. One was to try to increase fuel efficiency for cars and trucks, and that's because transportation is a big share of the greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. economy. But the other big share is from the electric power sector, and so the Obama administration put in place what you refer to as the Clean Power Plan, and that was really a set of standards to try to limit carbon pollution coming from the oldest and dirtiest power plants in the country, which are the coal and natural gas-fired plants that have been around for many, many years. And the Obama standards were ambitious.
But I am here to say that if we want to protect our economy and our security and our children's health, we're going to have to do more. The science tells us we have to do more.
They sought to reduce the pollution coming from the power sector over time. The projection was that they would have improved on greenhouse gas emissions by reducing them up to almost 20% below what would have happened anyway in the economy by 2030.
Right now, our power plants are the source of about a third of America's carbon pollution. That's more pollution than our cars, our airplanes, and our homes generate combined. That pollution contributes to climate change, which degrades the air our kids breathe. But there have never been federal limits on the amount of carbon that power plants can dump into the air. Think about that. We limit the amount of toxic chemicals like mercury and sulfur and arsenic in our air or our water, and we're better off for it. But existing power plants can still dump unlimited amounts of harmful carbon pollution into the air. For the sake of our kids and the health and safety of all Americans, that has to change. For the sake of the planet, that has to change.
By comparison, what the Trump plan would do is reduce emissions from the electric power sector by less than 1% by 2030. So you can see just with that comparison that the Trump plan is actually designed to do almost nothing to deal with carbon pollution from the electric power sector.
Our ACE rule will incentivize new technologies that will ensure coal plants can be part of a cleaner future. As we stand here today, the United States is the number one energy producer in the world. At the same time, we've reduced our carbon emissions and improved air quality and public health. The ACE rule will continue our nation's progress.
And the only other thing to add by way of giving context is the two plans are really using the same law. They're both using the Clean Air Act as the authority that the EPA has to put these standards in place. They just have very different approaches to how they would use the Clean Air Act. The Obama administration saw that they had more flexibility to be more ambitious, and the Trump administration's view is they have absolutely no flexibility and can't do any better.
Unlike the CPP, the ACE rule adheres to the four corners of the Clean Air Act. EPA sets the best system of emission reductions, and then states set the standards of performance. This is how the Clean Air Act says the process should work.
ACE specifically. So there's this term of art being used to describe the ACE rule, and that is that it's within the four corners of the Clean Air Act. Can you describe the sort of main difference in the sort of legal strategy used in the Clean Power Plan versus this new ACE rule?
This gets very nerdy and technical, but it actually can be boiled down to something fairly simple. The Clean Air Act says that for these power plants, the administration shall set standards that are, quote, the best system of emission reduction. That's the legal language. And that's the job the EPA has, is to figure out what that best system is and then set standards. So the Obama folks said, well, the best system of emission reduction, if you look at the electricity grid, is really a question about what can you do with the entire integrated grid, which operates like a giant machine. And what I mean is that all the power plants are linked together. You can dial up wind and solar power at certain times of day. You can dial down coal-fired and natural gas-fired power, etc. The Obama team looked at the entire grid and said, using all the tools available on this interconnected machine, how can we reduce greenhouse gas emissions? How can we do that by improving the use of efficiency? So we want the power plants to get more efficient, but we also expect to substitute in more solar power, more wind power, that is more renewables for coal and for natural gas. And we want to also substitute in more natural gas for coal because it's cleaner than coal. So what I'm describing is an approach in which they thought that setting the best system of emission reduction enabled them to look at the entire system. What the Trump administration does is quite different. They say, oh, no, no. The best system of emission reduction refers only to what you can do to cut your pollution at the site of the facility. You can't look at the grid as an interconnected machine. That's not what best system means. And so that leaves us looking at these plants and asking, how can they, in modest ways, become a little more efficient? Their approach, they're quite narrow, you might think of it as a very skinny or a kind of very meek approach, is to say, we're only going to look at what the units can do themselves. We're not going to treat them as what they are in reality, which is an interconnected system. So to really understand the difference here, you have to see what each of these strategies can accomplish. Because the Obama strategy to set standards looking across the grid allows you to substitute in natural gas for coal and renewables for coal and natural gas. And if you do that over time, what you can show is that the greenhouse gas emissions from the power sector go down significantly. But if you can't deploy more renewables and if you can't substitute in natural gas for coal, you really can't get very far with that policy.
I guess that goes to sort of like the core of the Clean Air Act, which is a lot of it has been to get polluting companies to just use the best gadget out there that emits the least. Am I right about that?
Yeah, it depends on the section of the law, because the words really matter. But Congress sometimes refers to the best technology. And if you're thinking about that, you might think about equipment. You know, what kind of scrubber can you put on your facility that will reduce the pollution that comes out of the smokestack? But you'll notice this language has best system. And, the EPA under Obama thought the best system when you're looking at carbon pollution, which doesn't have a kind of equipment fix yet for it, right? When you're looking at carbon pollution and you're looking at the interconnected grid, it makes sense to think of a system more broadly. This is really, a question of interpretation. And, reasonable people can disagree about what they think those words mean. And inevitably, this debate, I think, will wind up in the courts and may even go all the way to the Supreme Court. The Obama plan was challenged, and it did get to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is really sort of the court right before you get to the Supreme Court. And they heard the argument in the case. And the D.C. Circuit, I was at oral argument. It was a very long, very interesting day of arguments. The judges on the D.C. Circuit seemed to look like the majority of them were going to come down finding that the Clean Power Plan was actually perfectly legal and that the interpretation was a reasonable one. That's how most of us read the courtroom. But that decision never really got finalized. The Trump administration came in and took office before the court had issued its opinion, and they went and asked them to hold the case in abeyance because they wanted to replace the rule. And so it's taken a couple of years, but they now, that is what the announcement was just recently, was that they had finalized this rule. And so their argument now is, you know, the court doesn't need to decide about the Obama plan because it's been rescinded. So now what we're likely to see is a challenge from certain states like California, New York, and many others, and environmental groups and others challenging the new rule that the Trump administration has put out, arguing that it has a variety of legal flaws and hoping that the D.C. Circuit will strike it down.
So if you were arguing against the ACE rule before the Supreme Court or one of the appellate courts, what would your argument be?
There are a couple things I expect the challengers to argue. First of all, they're going to pounce on a lot of the assumptions in this rule. There are a lot of very favorable assumptions they make to defend their rule that are quite questionable. They have an analysis that they're using that manages to minimize the benefits of trying to cut carbon pollution while maximizing the costs, which I think folks are going to challenge. I mean, it's very interesting that a rule that purports to be trying to reduce pollution, by their own projection, might increase it. So that's one of the biggest vulnerabilities. And I think a court might have a hard time with that and say, how could this be defended as a rational plan? The other argument, though, is going to be about what the law means. You know, does best system of emission reduction mean what the Trump administration says it means or not? And so there will be a very furious fight about how to interpret the act. It is possible, if this were to go all the way to the Supreme Court, we don't know whether it will, but if the court were to take it, it certainly is possible that they could accept the Trump administration's very cramped, very narrow view of their power and say, the only way to read this law is the way they do. And if the court says that, it could create an obstacle for future administrations, because it would be locking in an interpretation that is a very minimal, very limited way of viewing the act. But it's also possible the Supreme Court would do something different, because this is an available place to land for the Supreme Court if it were to say, well, your reading is reasonable, but the language is ambiguous. The language isn't clear enough to say yours is the only way to read it. And that would leave room for another administration to come in and go back and re-examine this and take a different approach.
So walk me through what happens next with this ACE rule. What's the next legal procedure that we should be looking for?
There's a good chance that this won't reach the Supreme Court. Here we are in 2019. The rule has just been finalized. It takes some time for it to be formally published, which means it's not legally effective until it's formally published in a document called the Federal Register. So it's another few weeks typically until that. Then you've got a couple of months in which challengers can file their lawsuits to challenge it. Then you have a time period that has to elapse for all the briefs in the case to be written. And I'm saying all these things because these lawsuits take a lot of time. And months and months will go by before we actually get to oral argument. And then after the case is argued, the court, which is a three-judge panel on the D.C. Circuit, that's who hears these things, needs time to deliberate. And in a complex case like this, that's going to take some time. And then there might be a dissent, who knows, because in complex cases, often you have maybe two judges in the majority and one in the dissent. That'd be quite typical. And then when you have a case with a dissent, it takes them even longer to draft the opinions. So what I'm trying to say is it looks pretty tough on this calendar to imagine, even the D.C. Circuit deciding this challenge before the 2020 presidential election. If that's true, you may not get a decision until you have a new president or a second Trump administration. And if it's a new president, I can imagine, if it's a Democrat, I can imagine that they would go back into court and say just what the Trump folks said 4 years before, which is, please don't decide this case, please hold it in abeyance, because we too are going to go back and rescind and replace this rule. So you could imagine getting into a new presidential administration and having no court ever having ruled on either the Obama plan to reduce CO2 from the power sector or the Trump administration's effort to actually do very little to reduce that pollution. You might end up with no decision at all.
Wow. That's a little...
It's pretty interesting, right? And you know, what this all points to is the fact that we are working here with a statute, the Clean Air Act, which is a very powerful law drafted to give the agency flexibility. But it is a law that dates to 1970. And it's not the perfect instrument for dealing with climate change from all of the sectors of the U.S. economy. And everybody who's worked with it knows that. And President Obama knew that and said that publicly. And so did his EPA administrators. What everybody prefers is that the one player that's missing in action get in the game. And that is the U.S. Congress. What you're seeing is a pendulum shifting back and forth from administration to administration as the Environmental Protection Agency goes to look at its authorities under the Clean Air Act. And one administration reads the act one way and another administration reads the act another way. And that's the kind of way this is playing out because Congress has not drafted a law to address climate change. So I think what all this points to is it's long past time for the U.S. Congress to do something about this problem and pass a new statute. And it will eliminate all this back and forth and moving through the courts. Right now, the institutions making climate policy at the federal level in the United States are whatever president wins the election in partnership with the courts. That's the dynamic. And the Congress is nowhere to be seen.
Jody Freeman is a professor at Harvard Law School and founder of the school's Environmental and Energy Law Program. She was our first and our most recent guest on the Trump on Earth podcast, where we look at changes in environmental policy under the Trump administration. You can listen to more from that conversation and all 64 episodes at TrumpOnEarth.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining us for this special episode of The Allegheny Front. You can always find us on Facebook and Twitter at Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show and our podcast. I'm Carol Holsapple.
Support for The Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, and the Park Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports our coverage of conservation. The Sears Sweatland Family Foundation supports our coverage in Ohio. And the Robert F. Schuman Foundation supports our podcast, Trump on Earth. State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration among the Allegheny Front, WESA, WITF, and WHYY to cover the Commonwealth's energy economy.